Meseches Peah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Aleph, 2:1. The obligation to leave Peah is on each of one's fields. That is to say, if a person had two fields, he would have to leave a separate Peah on each of those two fields. So, for example, if a person had two fields and each field were 60 acres, he would have to leave 1 acre on field number one and a second acre of Peah on the second field number two. If, for argument's sake, he harvested the entire field number one, so then, and he left 2 acres on field number two, hoping that would cover the obligation of Peah for both fields, that simply wouldn't work. He'd have to go back and leave Peah again on the first field. So this Mishnah is defining what constitutes a legal division that makes one field into two fields. Mishnah says, Ve'elu mafsikin lepeah. The following are dividers, meaning they break up fields with respect to Peah. Meaning if you have a field that's divided by one of the following things, it has the status of two separate fields and two separate Peahs must be left, one on each side of this divide. The first is Hanachal. A Nachal, according to the Bartanura, is a river, a Nahar. That means a river flowing through the field, divides it in half, and both, for argument's sake, the northern side of the field and the southern side of the field with the river running between the two have to have separate Peahs. Other people explain Nachal as more usual explanation, which is a wadi. A wadi is a river bed, but there's not always running through it. A river has river water flowing through it 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. A wadi only has water flowing through it from time to time, and the other time it's like a dry river bed. Either way, that would divide up according to everyone, both a river and a wadi, for that matter, would divide up a field. The reason why the Bartanura doesn't like Nachal to be a wadi, a dried river bed, is because we'll see later on, undeveloped, uncultivated land as a divider anyways. Second divider, according to the Mishnah, is v'hashlulis. A shlulis is an irrigation canal. Before the age of sprinklers, you had to have, let's say, your pond and had to get your pond water to irrigate and water your field. You'd have a little irrigation canal that would run from the pond water source to your fields. And then from there, you'd even have smaller arteries coming off the main irrigation canal to make sure that your fields are watered appropriately. So the shlulis, that big irrigation canal that runs through the field, is a divider, making it two separate fields. According to this Tana and this Mishnah here, there's no minimum size for that shlulis. As long as the irrigation canal is an irrigation canal, then it divides the field into two. Then it says, v'aderech hayachid and v'aderech harabim. A road that's used for individuals, that is say it's just four almost across, or more, or a road that's used for the masses, that is say it's 16 almost across. An almost about 1.5 feet or half a meter. So we're talking about, say, for Yachid, say 6-7 feet across, 2 meters across. And for the Rabim, it's something like 8 meters across or 25 feet, something like that across. So both of those constitute an intercession between your two field halves, and each field would have to leave Peah separately. You may ask the obvious question, which is, if even a small 4 amma derech hayachid, a private road, divides a field, it goes without saying that a larger public road that's 16 ammas across would divide the field in two. The reason why the Mishnah says both cases is because we'll see in a subsequent Mishnah, it will say that the list here in this Mishnah doesn't apply to orchards. And therefore, when it comes to a field, we're saying even a small derech hayachid, a private road, does divide a grain field in half. But even, we'll say, a large public road won't divide an orchard. More about that later on. Next, the Mishnah says, Ushvil harabim, ushvil hayachid. Both a path that goes through a field that's designed for many people, or a private path that runs through the field, both of those will constitute an intercession, a hefsek, provided that it's hakavua bimos hachama ubimos geshamim, which literally means that this path is in effect and used throughout the year, both Yimos HaChama in the summertime and Yimos HaGeshamim in the wintertime. So now, just the difference between a derech, a road, and a shvila, path. So a derech runs from, let's say, one city to a different city or one town to a different town, whereas a shvil is a pathway within the fields themselves, so for more localized use. We're saying here that even a small path, a shvil, constitutes a divider, provided that it's used all year round. Now, normally what happens is you'll need to plant your fields in the beginning of the onset of the winter when the rains begin, call it September time, you know, Cheshvan time, whatever. And then after you've seeded the fields, you may not walk and trample in the fields because the grain is growing there or whatever you're growing there is growing, and you'll damage the crop. So if this path is just a temporary path to allow you to plant in the wintertime or to harvest in the summertime, it's just a temporary path and doesn't constitute a divider of the field. The field really is one single whole field. It just has to have a pathway so you can operate in it in the proper times. But if it's a path that exists in the field all year round, then it does divide into two separate fields, meaning two separate payas. If you'll ask again the same question, well, once I know that even a shvil hayachid, a small path for an individual, which could, you know, be, you know, 1 foot wide, is a divider if it's used all year round, then of course it goes without saying that a shvil, a path for the rabbim, for the masses, which might be much wider, of course goes without saying that that's a divider. The answer is, we'll see that since there's a condition that it has to be used all year round, the chiddush of the Mishnah is, even if it's a very wide path, still, if it's not used all year round, it's not a divider. Whereas if it's a very narrow path, it does divide, even if it's used, provided it's used all year round. Now, Mishnah continues on. It says, habur. A bur is an uncultivated piece of land. Like the word English, burish, is actually from the Hebrew bur. The Mishnah always talks about a person who's unsocialized, uncultivated, in terms of his, you know, intellect. He's called a boor, like virgin soil. So here, boor means the same thing, virgin soil, that if you just never cultivated any land, if that strip of uncultivated land divides through a run through the middle of your field, you have two separate fields. Vahanir, even if you've plowed the field. So plowing really is used for preparing a boor, uncultivated virgin soil, for subsequent planting. But you could have a boor which never was plowed, or a nir which had been plowed in preparation for planting. So even a nir that has been plowed up but never planted, that also would be a divider between two fields if you have the nir running through the middle of your field. Vizera acher, the last of this list is zera acher, another species. That is to say, if you had, let's say, a wheat field, and running through the middle you had a strip of barley going over there, so then the barley strip divides into the wheat field, into two separate wheat fields. Let's not talk about kilayim. That's a different topic for a different time. But kilayim is not the issue over here at all. So zera acher, a different type of crop, which has its own peah, will divide and separate between the other two halves on either side of it. So they need their own peah also. Now, the Mishnah goes on to say, what about havakotz l'shachas? But if a person reaps part of his, let's say, wheat field for shachas. Now, shachas is animal fodder. That is to say, he had a wheat field growing. When wheat grows, so it starts out being wheatgrass. Health food people love to eat wheatgrass juice. So wheatgrass is good for animals also. So if a person harvested, let's say, took his lawnmower and he went down through the middle of his wheat field when it was, let's say, less than a third grown. So it's nice green grass that will turn later on into nice brown stalks of wheat. And he mows a strip of wheatgrass through the middle of his field and he collects that grass and gives it to his animals. So now, does that constitute a division in the field such that each side of the wheatgrass strip needs its own peah? So that will depend on whether you look at this as the beginning of the harvest process, and it's one long extended harvest, and therefore it wouldn't constitute a hefsek, or if this is a harvest all to itself, in which case this wheatgrass harvest renders this strip is its own story, independent, leaving the two halves of the wheat field now separate halves, needing separate peah. So the Mishnah says, it's mafsik divrei Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir holds that the line that runs through the middle when a person harvested for shachas, for animal fodder, is indeed a hefsek. That is to say, he holds that it's not the beginning of the harvest. It's a harvest all to itself, and therefore it divides the fields in half. And the reason why is because he's harvesting here for animal food. And remember, we said that animal food, animal crops are not eligible in payah. So this would be like an animal harvest, and therefore making a whole separate crop, separate from the two grain fields for human consumption on either side of the stripe that he mowed. However, the Chacham say, Eino mafsik, the Chacham say no, it's just the beginning of the harvesting process. The fact that he chose to harvest some early doesn't change things, and therefore this stripe in the middle is just a stripe of an early harvest, and then either side of the stripe continues on as being one single wheat field. Ela'im ken charash. Provided that he doesn't actually till the strip of land that he had harvest prematurely for fodder as shachas. If he actually does harisha, he tills the soil, that of course like a full reset and nothing will grow there, and it makes as if there's now a stripe of uncultivated land in the middle, dividing the field into two halves and clearly indicating that each half is its own separate half, and that the original harvest for the shachas, for the fodder, wasn't the beginning of a harvest, but rather a harvest all to itself. And the halacha is not like Reb Meir, meaning that kotzer l'shachas, harvesting for animal fodder in the middle, does not constitute a hefsek to divide your wheat field into two half fields. Maseches Peah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis, 2-2. The previous Mishnah had said that a shlulis, an irrigation canal, divides one's field into two halves, such that each half must have a separate peah left. Here, Rabbi Yehuda will disagree with that and say it depends. It only applies that the water canal that runs through one's field divides it into two separate halves, meaning two separate fields, if it's sufficiently wide that both halves of the fields can't be harvested at the same time. The Mishnah says, Amas Hamayim, an irrigation canal, She'eni Yecholi Katzer Ka'achas, that can't be harvested at the same time, meaning both sides of the field cannot be harvested simultaneously. According to the Bartanura, if one would stand in the middle of that canal, he couldn't harvest both sides simultaneously. In that case, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mafsekes. If it's that wide of a canal, then Rabbi Yehuda says the irrigation canal does divide the field into two separate fields, meaning Rabbi Yehuda says that if it is narrower than that, it doesn't divide it. Tanakama from the previous Mishnah said, regardless of how narrow the irrigation canal is, it does divide into two halves. The halacha here is like Rabbi Yehuda, meaning that we paskin that if one could harvest both sides of the irrigation canal at the same time, then it does not divide it into two separate fields for peah. The Rambam understands, by the way, that the definition of so wide that it divides is that one standing on one edge of the land beside the irrigation canal couldn't harvest the other side of the irrigation canal. I mean, not standing in the middle of the canal, like the Bartanura says, but rather standing on one edge, you couldn't reach the other side to harvest it. The Mishnah continues to talk about a new point regarding something that might divide one's field into two, and that is if, let's say, one had a ridge going through the middle of his field, such that it couldn't be plowed, the whole field couldn't be plowed all at the same time. He'd have to plow with the, let's say the oxen and the plow would plow the left side of the ridge and then the right side of the ridge, which then would give the impression to an onlooker that there's two separate fields here with a boor, an uncultivated segment running down the middle. Then he would go through manually by hand, taking, let's say, a hoe and manually by hand till that middle ridge section so he could plant there also, such that when the entire process of plowing is finished and he plants the field, it will be one contiguous field. Just that along the way, the plowing happened in stages, first the left side of the ridge, then the right side of the ridge, and then the middle of the ridge. The question is, does that look separate enough to be considered two separate fields? And the answer is no, it doesn't. The Mishnah says, V'chol ha'harim. If you have, literally ha'harim, of course, means mountains, but here it's, of course, a small ridge, asher b'ma'ader ya'aderun, that can only be plowed by hand, manually. Bit of a poetic expression here, based on the Pasuk in Yeshaya, according to the Bartanura. Afal pi she'ein habakar yechol la'avor b'kelav. Even though the oxen, or the ox, can't go over that ridge because it's too steep, and wouldn't be able to make it over that ridge with its plow and the implements attached to it. Nevertheless, who knows on peah l'kol, a person may leave a single peah for the whole field with that ridge running through the middle of it, of course, presuming that he ultimately plants the entire contiguous field, including the ridge. Maseches Peah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Gimel, 2-3. Hakol masik lezraim, ena masik le'ilam. All the things we list in the previous Mishnayos regarding what would divide a field of, let's say, grain into two separate fields for the sake of peah, meaning irrigation canals, paths, roads, bore, the uncultivated land, near plowed lands, and zera acher, a different species, all those things are not considered to be hafsakot, dividers, when it comes to an orchard, a place where trees are growing. The reason why is because it makes no economic sense for a person to have big gaps in his grain field or his, you know, other kinds of, you know, kitnios, legume fields. One would pack it close together to maximize the space and efficiency of harvest. Whereas when it comes to trees in an orchard, So it makes sense to space the trees apart. It's normal. And therefore, it's not any reason to feel that a path running through an orchard would divide into two separate orchards. The Mishnah says, Ela gader, with the exception of a proper fence. A gader actually probably is best translated as a stone wall, in fact, or a fence. It must be 10 tfachim high. So roughly, you know, three feet, a meter high, waist height. If you have a wall that high, it would then divide between the different trees in the orchard, because that makes it clear that the orchard or grove, whatever it is, of trees is meant to be divided in half. Vimhayaseyar kosesh, if, idiomatically this means, if the branches of the trees commingle, they push against each other over that wall, enomafsik, then it still wouldn't, the wall wouldn't divide the orchard or grove, whatever it is, into two halves. Elenosam peyel akol. Rather, if you've got the branches of the trees reaching over the wall or fence down the middle, and the branches touch one another, pushing against one another, that would make it as if it's a single grove or orchard, and one peah on one of the edges of the orchard would be sufficient for the entire orchard. Just to clarify, the word se'ar kotesh, also sort of poetic language, se'ar means hairs, and kotesh is the word kotesh means to grind, as in what one does with a mortar and pestle. A machtesh is the mortar in which one grinds things. So literally it means the hairs grind together, but the idiomatically means that the branches push up against one another over the wall together. Meseches Peah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Dalet, 2-4. The previous Mishnah had said that it's quite difficult to divide an orchard or a grove of trees into separate parts that would require two separate peahs, and unless there's a proper wall running through the middle of the orchard, it would be considered to be a single orchard, even if there's a path or a road running through the orchard. Here in Mishnah Dalet, we say there are certain types of trees that even a wall wouldn't divide it into two separate orchards for the halachas of peah. The reason why is because it apparently is normal to spread these trees out very far. The Mishnah says, Vila Charuvin, when it comes to carob trees, Kol Haroin Ze Ad Ze, any carob tree that is an eye shot of another carob tree is considered to be connected, so that if there be a chain of carob trees at a great distance, but when you stood at carob tree number one, you could see carob tree number two, and from carob tree number two, you could see carob tree number three, etc., then they're all linked. And even if there's proper gedarim, proper walls, 10 tefachim high, running between the carob trees, it doesn't matter. All the carob trees are considered to be a single carob tree grove, and a single peah is left for all of them. Amar Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, this is Rabban Gamliel de Yavna. He was the Rabban Gamliel who was the first Nasi. You see Rabban, that tells you he's a Nasi. He was the first Nasi, leader of the Jewish people, after the destruction of the Second Temple. He's the one who took over for Rabban Yochanan and Zakkai, who set things up in Yavne. So Rabban Gamliel says, No hagen hayu beis abba. He says that the way in which my family home, my estate was, back even before the Chorban, before the destruction of the temple, their custom was, their practice was, Nosn pe achas lezeisim shayu lochem b'chol ruach. That is to say, they left a single peah for all the olive trees on any given side of the city, even if there were walls that divided the different olive trees. So we're talking about olive trees here. We are not talking about carob trees just yet. V'lecharuven, and as far as carob trees go, says Rabban Gamliel, kol haroin ze et ze. He corroborates the Mishnah's opinion here that as long as the different carob trees are an eye shot one to the next, there's a single peah given on all of them. So just going back a second here to the olives. So olive trees we're seeing are even more difficult to divide up than carob trees and any other tree, because even if there's a wall, and even if they're not an eye shot one of the other, all of the olive trees, let's say on the northern side of the city, the Nasi's house would give a single peah for all of them. A rationale for why that might be the case is because olive trees produce olives which aren't eaten. They're rather gathered together and then processed at a single olive press. And presumably, since olive presses are very large and significant infrastructure required, there'd be a single olive press on a given side of the city where all of the olive trees in that region would be processed, all the olives from those olive trees. And therefore, Rabban Gamliel says the whole side of the city, all the olive trees are left a single peah. So just to illustrate the point, if for argument's sake, the city were triangular shape and it had olive trees going on all three sides, there'd be three separate peahs, one for each of the sides, and presumably there'd be three different bateba and three different olive presses, one on each side of the city. The Mishnah concludes by saying, Rabbi Eliezer, Reb Tzadok Omer, Mishmo. Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Reb Tzadok, says in his name, meaning he has a different version of what Rabbi Gamliel said. According to Rabbi Eliezer, Reb Tzadok, what Rabbi Gamliel said was, Af lecha ruven shayalehem b'chol ha'ir, that when it came to carob trees, you would leave a single peah on all of the carob trees in the entire city. However, the halacha is not like him. Halacha is like the first version of Rabbi Gamliel, which is that there's only a single peah given on carob trees, provided they are in eyeshot one of the other. If they're further spaced apart than that, then they each have their separate peah given. Just to explain why that might be the case, carob trees, although we might think of carob trees not very large trees, if you've seen them, but in Israel, they are more or less the largest of the fruit-bearing trees here that grow indigenous to Israel. And there's actually sugyas and Baba Basra talking about how much space they need to grow, quite a good amount of space. And therefore, it's normal to space them out wide. And that's why carob trees are more united than other kind of trees when it comes to the halachas of Peah. Mesechas Peah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Hei, 2-5. The Mishnah continues to talk about the requirement to leave a separate Peah on each different crop one has. So previously we said that if you have two different fields, you can't leave on one field for the other. Now we're going to discuss if you have two different crops, if you can leave one peah from one crop on behalf of the other. The Mishnah says, Hazareya esadeu minechad. If you've seeded your field with a single type of produce, afal pishu oseo shtei granot. Even if you harvest it in two separate batches, and you're particular to keep those patches separate for whatever reason, nevertheless, nosem peahachas. You still only leave a single peah. So the word goren means like a threshing floor where a person does the separation from the wheat kernels from their husk. And then after that, the stacking and storage, which is the silo by the goren. So here we're using the word gorenos as a borrowed term, meaning you do two separate batches of processing. On the other hand, the Mishnah says, zora shnei minin, if you planted two different kinds of species, let's not worry about the issue of kilaim if that bothers you. Just forget that for now, not relevant. But if hypothetically, if a person had both, say, spelt and wheat in his field, afalpi shehu asan gornachas, even though he harvests them together and combines the wheat and spelt kernels together, like for argument's sake, he wants to make a mixed wheat flour that has half wheat and half spelt together. So he treats it as, he just doesn't bother separating the wheat from the spelt. He just harvests it together, threshes it together. Ultimately, he will grind it into flour together. So he as far as he's concerned, it's like a single crop. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter. No sen shte peos. He must leave a separate peah for the two different crops, one for the wheat and one for the spelt. Now the middle case. Hazareya esadeo shte minechitin. What happens if you plant your field with two different varieties of a single species? In this case, two varieties of wheat, for argument's sake, you know, light wheat and dark wheat, whatever it might be. So, two strains of wheat. So then it depends. Asan gornachas, if you treat them as a single crop and you harvest them together and you let them and be processed and stored together, so you don't differentiate, you harvest them as a single batch, nosin peachas. Then you leave a single peah for both, because as far as you're concerned, it's just wheat, and the fact that it's two different subspecies, two different varieties, doesn't make a difference. On the other hand, shtei granos, if you're particular about keeping the two subspecies separate, you keep the, let's say, the dark variety of wheat separate from the light variety. So then, since you're treating it as two separate crops, you must, nosin shtei peos, you must leave a separate peah for each of the two varieties of wheat in your field. Meseches Peah, Perek Beis Mishnah Vav, 2-6. This Mishnah is a continuation of the previous Mishnah, and it shows where the halacha came from that we said in the end of the previous Mishnah. This Mishnah says, Maase, once happened, Shezar Reb Shimon Isha Mitzpah Lifnei Rabban Gamliel, that this person, Rabbi Shimon, from the place called Mitzpah, he planted his fields, literally means in front of Rabban Gamliel. Of course, it doesn't mean Rabban Gamliel was standing in his field watching, it means that it was in the era or under the jurisdiction of Rabban Gamliel, and therefore he is being implicated, he's being sort of responsible here. Va'al lishkas hagazis v'shalu. And they went up, they meaning presumably Rabbi Shimon and his neighbors, and I'll explain in a second, other members of the courts, to go ask the question at the lishkas hagazis. Lishkas hagazis means literally the chamber of hewn stone, and that was the home of the Sanhedrin. So what's happening here, the Mishnah is in brief summarizing how a question might be brought up to the Sanhedrin, the Jewish Supreme Court, to get a ruling. So the proper procedure would be that in this case, Rabbi Shimon, would go to his local Bezin in his town and ask what the halacha is if he didn't know. If that local Bezin didn't know, then they would send the question to Jerusalem. And there was a particular Bezin there, a Bezin of 23 Dayanim, judges, at the entrance to the Har HaBayis, and they would receive questions from around the country and answer them. In the event that that Bezin of 23 didn't know, they would go to a higher court yet, which was located at the entrance to the located on the Har HaBayis, near the entrance of the temple. And again, there'd be 23 greater Dayanim over there who would answer questions that came to them. And if they couldn't answer the question, then everyone would go, at least representatives of everyone would go, to the Sanhedrin HaGadol, the primary Bezdin, the Supreme Court of 71 Zakenim elders who would answer any questions. And in the event that there was not a lack of clarity, they would discuss the issue and ultimately they would vote on it and the majority would rule. Nimnu v'gamru, they would vote and decide based on the principle of Acharav Lahatos, going after the majority. The majority of the Sanhedrin would then rule on how to follow in a particular case. So here the story is that they, meaning Rabbi Shimon and the lower Batei Din courts, did not know the answer to this question about how to rule in a case of a crop which is made of two different subspecies, like two different varieties of wheat. Do you look at it as one or two crops for the sake of Peah? So they went up to Lishkas HaGazas to ask. Amar Nachum HaLavlar. Nachum, the scribe, was only mentioned here. This is only mentioned in the Talmud. Mekubal Ani Merebi Miyasha. He, Nachum, says he has a tradition from Rebbe Miyasha, also mentioned nowhere else in the Mishnah of the Gemara. Shekibal Me'aba, who received it from father. That presumably would mean, at least literally, that Rebbe Miyasha got it from Nachum's father, although there are other Girsos versions that say it's that Rebbe Miyasha received it from his father. Shekibal min hazugos, who got their tradition from the zugos, that is to say the pairs. There were five pairs of leaders from Klal Yisrael. The last one, famously, Hillel and Shammai. Shekiblu min ha-Nevi'im, who got the tradition from the prophets of the Tanakh. Halacha l'Moshe mi-Sinai, who have a tradition that goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu Har-Sinai, that b'zorei esadeu shnei min echitin, that if one plants his field with two different varieties of wheat, ima san gor nachas, if he treats the two varieties as one single crop and he makes a single batch of them and threshes them and processes them together, then nosim peah achas, he'll give a single peah on the whole field, even though there are two varieties of wheat there. And shtei geronos, if on the other hand he keeps the two subspecies of wheat separately and processes them separately, two separate batches, then nosim shnei peos, he must leave two separate peos, one for each of the two varieties of wheat in his field. Meseches Peah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Zayin, 2:7. The Torah, when talking about the mitzvah of Peah, says, uvukutzrichem, when you are harvesting, in your harvesting. That means it has to be both your harvest, as opposed to someone else doing the harvesting for themselves or taking it for themselves. And also the Torah is talking about you, a Jewish person, as opposed to, say, a non-Jewish person or an animal that does the harvesting. So the Mishnah will require that for Peah to be obliged in this field, it must be both that it's your harvest, you own it, and also that it's you, the Jew, who are doing the harvesting. Now, just to understand the Mishnah properly, you have to remember the lumdus, the logic behind Peah. Until one starts the harvest, having reaped the first ear of grain, so the field is all standing grain, and there is no way to give Peah. The mitzvah Peah is, once you're harvesting, not to harvest till the end. So until the harvest begins, there's no such thing as Peah, which is why a person couldn't hypothetically say, I want my entire field to pay for the niyam, for the poor people. That doesn't work. But once you've harvested the first stalk of grain, now there's an obligation to not finish the harvest, and you can leave any amount that you want as pay, a little bit or a lot, according to the Torah. Doesn't matter. Which means, as you start harvesting, grain by grain, so what's left standing, the obligation for that, for the pay part of it, devolves on what's left standing. So for argument's sake, a person, let's say, has 60 acres of field and he's harvesting it. So after you harvest the first acre, there's 59 acres left. Somewhere in that 59 acres has to be 1 acre for a payah, but it could be any of those 59 acres. And then when you harvest the next acre, so then what's left is of the 58 remaining acres of standing grain, one of them has to let this payah and so on. So that would mean that, and the Mishnah will say now, that if the last bit, let's say when a person harvested down, he's harvested 58 of his 60 acres of wheat, now he's planning on leaving one of the two final standing ones as Peah. If he then stops doing the harvesting, let's say for argument's sake, a non-Jew comes and steals his remaining grain and harvests the last 2 acres for himself, the non-Jew self, so then there'll never be an obligation of payah, because when the non-Jew took the last 2 acres and harvested them, he wasn't able to fulfill the pasuk of uvakutzrachem, it didn't belong to him and he wasn't Jewish, and therefore there was no obligation of payah. And therefore, what he took, the non-Jew took and harvested, is totally exempt from payah. Even if hypothetically he would return those 2 acres worth of grain to the Jew, still it's forevermore exempt from payah. Because he, who actually took the last bit, which had the mitzvah of payah devolving on it, he who harvested it, he did it without a mitzvah of payah, no obligation of payah, and therefore that grain is exempt from payah. And therefore the Mishnah says, Sada shekitzru goyim, if you have a field and it was harvested entirely by non-Jews, the other girsos says kusim, the proper girsos is probably goyim, meaning a non-Jew harvests the field. Now we're not saying you're non-Jewish workers, that of course would be an extension of you, but if non-Jews come in the night for argument's sake and they just harvest the field for themselves, let's say, then what they harvest is exempt from payah, even if it would come back to a Jewish person, what the Jewish person recovers still exempt from payah. Similarly, katsura listim, if robbers, you know, bandits come and steal the grain, even if those bandits are Jews, in the middle of the night, Jews come and sneak into your field and harvest your field for themselves, let's say, so what they harvest is exempt from payah. They can't leave payah. And again, the same thing, even if you would somehow recover your grain, still, it's exempt from payah. Karsamua namalim, if hypothetically the field was chopped down by ants who gobbled up the stalks and made them fall, so they did the harvest, so to speak, again, exempt because they're not kutzrachem, they're not you, they're ants. Or shibarta haruach, for argument's sake, the wind came and blew the stalks up and uprooted them. The harvesting is done by the ruach, the wind, and not by you, and therefore exempt from payah. O behema, similarly, if an animal comes and does the uprooting, does the harvest for you, hypothetically, then the harvest would be exempt from payah. All those cases, patura. Now, based on the lumbus logic I explained at the beginning, hear this. Katzer chetzia v'katzru listim chetzia. What happens if you harvest the first half of your field? You harvest the first 30 acres. Then tomorrow you're planning on doing the second 30 acres, leaving one of them as payah. But before the second day comes around, that night comes in the listim, the robbers, and they take your second half of the field for themselves. So the question is, how much payah must be left? The answer is none. Patura. The entire harvest is exempt from payah because the 30 that was remaining, somewhere in there was the entire payah obligation. And when the non-Jew, or excuse me, the bandits came and he took it, so he was exempt from leaving payah, and therefore there's no payah to be left. Even if, hypothetically, the list and the robbers are Jewish and they wanted to do tshuva and reimburse the aniyim, the poor people, it can't work. Since their harvesting was exempt from payah, they can't leave payah. As the Mishnah says, shechovas ha-payah bekama. The obligation to leave payah is only on the standing grain. So it means whatever's left standing, only from that part is where the payah can be left, and whoever finishes the harvest, he's the one to leave payah, and if that person's exempt or the animal's exempt from payah, then as that last bit of field is harvested, there's no payah to be left at all. Maseches Peah, Perk Beis, Mishnah Ches, 2:8. The Mishnah continues to explore the mechanics behind when one must leave payah and who must leave the payah. The Mishnah says, Katsrua listim chetia, if robbers harvested half of one's field. So we said in the previous Mishnah that since the verse requires kutzrachem, your harvest, if it's not your harvest, but rather a stolen harvest, you're exempt from leaving payah. So here, robbers harvested your field, but they are only harvested half of the field. So on that half of the harvest would be totally exempt from payah. However, the cuts are hu chetzia, if now the owner harvests the second half of his field, nosin payah, Mimasha Katsar. He has to leave payah on the half that he harvested. So for argument's sake, if one had a field that were 120 square meters and robbers came and stole half of the harvest, cutting down 60 of those meters, square meters, and their 60 square meters remain. Now, if the farmer who owns the field harvests the second 60 square meters of his 120 meter square meter field, then the farmer must leave one square meter, meaning 1/60th, meaning payah on the second half that he harvested. The Mishnah says, katsar chetzia umachar chetzia. If the original owner harvests the first half of his field, and then he sells the second half of his field to another purchaser, and that second purchaser then harvests the second half of the field. Halokeach nosin peah l'kol. The purchaser will leave peah on the entire field. In contrast to the first case, the Mishnah we're saying here, that if the original owner harvests the first 60 meters, and then the purchaser harvests the second 60 meters, so then the purchaser, the second owner, must leave 2 square meters of peah, 1/60th of the entire 120 square meter field. The reason why here is because the first half of the field, the first 60 meters that were harvested, are obligated in peah. And as we explained in the previous Mishnah, once the harvest begins, all the remaining standing grain, the kama, the standing grain, is pregnant with the potential of being peah. In other words, as one cuts down certain ears of grain, then the obligation to leave peah devolves onto the remaining standing grain. So when a person harvested half his field, he had no obligation yet to leave peah, but there is still an embedded potential obligation to leave peah on what still stands. So when the new purchaser comes and buys that field, he is acquiring not just the asset of the field, but the liability, so to speak, of leaving the peah that's embedded in it, the potential peah embedded in it. So when he buys that second half of the field, the remaining 60 square meters, he's purchasing not just 60 square meters, but he's purchasing 60 square meters that has a generic obligation of peah, which he'll leave on his own for the 1 meter of the 60, 1/60th, but also an embedded second square meter of peah that is left behind, sort of encumbering the standing grain by what the original owner harvested. Now, just understand, the Mishnah here is assuming that the purchaser understands the situation. He's not being blindsided. It's not a case of mekachtos. It's presumed here in the Mishnah that the purchaser understands that he's buying a half-harvested field, and therefore the obligation to leave peah has been devolved onto the second half that's still standing. Fine. The Mishnah continues, katzer chetzia v'hiktish chetzia. If the original owner reaps half the field, and then he is makdish, he gives to the temple the second half. So now, by being makdish the field, now the standing grain becomes property of the temple, and someone else will then redeem the rest of the field, meaning they'll pay money to the temple and purchase the grain left in the field, and the money will be sanctified, and that will be used in the temple for whatever purposes. So the person who redeems the field is called the poda, the redeemer, the one who pays the money. Miyad ha-gizbar, he who purchases the field and redeems it from the gizbar, that's the appointee, the functionary who's working on behalf of the mikdash, of the temple, who, the purchaser, knows some peah l'kol, he will have to give peah on the total amount of the field, meaning again, the case is the original owner harvests the first 60 square meters, then with the remaining 60 square meters, he gives it to the base of mikdash, he's makdish it, then a third party comes and purchases that land from the base of mikdash, deconsecrating it, being poda it. So when the purchaser gets it, he's acquiring the second 60 standing square meters of grain that has both the usual 1/60th requirement to peah, plus another 1/60th of the already cut down field that had devolved onto it. So he will leave 2 square meters of the 60 that he cuts down. The reason why the Mishnah speak this out is because if the mikdash, the gizbar, the functionary who's working on behalf of the temple, would have harvested and reaped the rest of the field, he, the mikdash, does not leave, the temple does not leave any peah at all, because it's not an individual person who's obligated in the mitzvah of peah. So even though it was temporarily in the hands of the mikdash, that doesn't make a difference, since it was redeemed while it was still kama, standing grain, and we said the obligation to leave peah is embedded in, it's encumbering the standing grain, so therefore, the purchaser will be the one who has to leave pay on the whole remaining field, both for what he harvests as well as what the 60th of what the previous owner harvested.